tell the truth. I will only tell the truth.
Welcome back to the NFL CD podcast. We're talking NFL off the top of the noggin from south of the Twin Cities and New Jersey's capital. And today, from New York, we got a special guest joining us, actually just me to start out. And this is Mike Kiewak. He's from the Watertown Daily Times in New York. Even better than that, he's a former classmate of mine, a friend of mine from the school you never heard of, Indiana University of Pennsylvania. He roots for the Buccaneers. And way back before he hit it big in New York, he was the no-nonsense copy editor for our college newspaper. Privileged to have you on, Mike. How you doing?
Great, Cody. Thanks for having me on.
You loved that introduction, didn't you?
I think that was fantastic. I think you really hit all the main points right there.
Awesome. Well, we're starting out with a topic that is, pretty touchy. It's not NFL necessarily. It is NFL because the president is making it an NFL topic. Just bear with me while I'm just going to kind of review and set us up for this conversation here. But obviously, national anthem protests are a big headline. And this is, you know, former San Francisco 49ers quarterback Colin Kaepernick started taking a knee during the national anthems in 2016. This was after he simply sat for the anthem and then after discussions with a military veteran decided to start kneeling instead. He did this saying, and I quote, "I am not going to stand up to show pride in a flag for a country that oppresses black people and people of color." This was obviously in the wake of publicized police shootings. He continued to do this throughout 2016. Several players on other teams did the same. It continued into this season until on Friday, President Donald Trump, who previously said that if Kaepernick didn't like America, he should just leave. He used profanity as he called NFL owners to essentially fire players who take a knee to protest injustice during the anthem. He called them privileged, essentially said they should not be disrespecting the flag. Since then, he's tweeted dozens of times calling the NFL to ban kneeling. That was just today. And in response, this past Sunday, this is why we're starting the show with this. We had the majority of NFL teams release statements saying they stick up for free speech. We had more than 200 players either take a knee or stand with linked arms or not even come onto the field for the national anthem. So it doesn't seem to be going away anytime soon. And I'm sorry to ramble to start here, but first question that I think we have to ask that why we're talking about this is because, you know, some people say sports shouldn't have politics infused. Well, when you have the president of the United States launching what is essentially a now daily attack on these players, we have to talk about it, don't we?
I absolutely agree. Absolutely.
I think, you know, also one thing that needs to be clarified before we go into, you know, a couple of questions here. If you still think this is a protest of the flag of America, I'm not so sure. You know, I think you have to listen to what these players are saying. Can you disagree with the method? Sure. But I think we've gotten to the point where even you've got Shepard Smith of Fox News has made it clear that this is not necessarily about offending the flag. These players aren't
very
kneeling
true.
To say, we hate the flag. So just give me your thoughts just starting out. I mean, when you first saw Kaepernick take the knee last year, what was your reaction? And then now, obviously, a big unified rebuke of Donald Trump. I mean, what's the general atmosphere in your mind through all this stuff?
Well, I think that's a good question, Cody. This is a topic that's obviously very touchy for a lot of people. You know, I think that you need to be able to approach it delicately and in a nuanced way, one that is not as simply black as white as I hate America or I'm standing up for what I believe in. You need to be able to look at it from everyone's perspective because everyone comes through from a different background, different walks of life, and, you know, how they view things can be dramatically different from your own. Personally, when I saw Kaepernick do it, I thought it was very brave of him. I think that, you know, you in locker rooms, you know, there's a certain degree of, you know, unity, and you don't really want to see people. You can see even when there's other issues, you know, continuity breaks in continuity can be controversial and, you know, get in the way and people criticize that. So especially something as big as this, you knew it was going to cause a bit of an uproar, but to see what it spiraled into, it's pretty crazy. You know, and I applaud a lot of these guys. I mean, ultimately, the NFL is a private business, and it can do, and the owners of it can do whatever they see fit. And if they chose to, you know, agree with President Trump's message of firing these guys for standing up and doing what they believe in on their job, then, you know, it could be a real possibility. So knowing then the face of a possible termination of contract, that you stand up and you believe what you want to believe, you show what you want to believe, I think that's very brave. And of course, there are more sides to it that you can talk about and, you know, in proper avenues and whatnot. But my initial reaction is just it's very courageous.
Yeah, and I kind of want to just play devil's advocate with some of this, because I feel like I just get the sense, and just so the listeners understand this, Mike and I haven't even had conversations outside of a couple of back and forths on Twitter last night about this topic.
No.
So I don't know what he's going to say. But I just get the sense that we're probably going to agree on a lot of things. So I just want to kind of play devil's advocate here. You know, you said it's courageous for Colin Kaepernick, and I do see some value. And I don't think that everything that he did, you know, I don't think that the wearing socks that portrayed cops as pigs was very helpful to his protest.
No, definitely not.
Yeah, but you're going to get this backlash now. You know, I do still think that there was some courageousness involved in taking the knee, especially last year when he didn't have, you know, the rest of the league with him. But playing devil's advocate here, you're still going to have people that say, well, why do you have to do it in a way that disrespects the flag? Why do you have to do it here when we're trying to stand unified to honor the military? I mean, what do you say to that?
And you know what? That's a really, it's indeed, it's a complicated issue. And like I said before, I never liked to reduce it to something as simple as black and white. I think ultimately these guys say repeatedly, this protest is not about the flag and it's about a platform. And it's hard to debate since the NFL agreed, since I believe it was 2009, they believed to, you know, they agreed to show and be out for the national anthem and show these guys standing for the national anthem. You know, it's a platform. And like you said, it can be debated what serves as a proper platform for this, but protests throughout history have never been about what's proper. And it's never been about what's conformist, because that's a paradox in itself when you talk about the two ideologies.
Right.
And, you know, these guys, they wanted to be seen and they wanted to make a statement, and they have. But ultimately, I think the problem is the way they've chosen to do it. People are conflating the message with their own, with their own tremendous sense of patriotism. And I think it's hard for these people to see now. They're offended and they don't see these guys as patriots. And you know, and it's tough. Oh, you go ahead.
No, you echoed words that I heard from Bob Costas this morning, and I think he joined, it may have been CNN, but obviously Bob Costas, NBC Sports commentator. He basically said, you know, he stands for all the anthems. He goes to games, but when you go to a Yankees game and they play the anthem, who are they always honoring? They're always honoring military, and there's nothing wrong with that. But military are not, this is what Bob Costa said, military are not the only patriots in America. What about school teachers or social workers or dissidents? And he said exactly what you just said. Some people, I think, have conflated this to think that patriotism means we're hanging a flag outside our house. You know, we're not necessarily glorifying military, but, you know, we're this bumper sticker, flag waving, military-only patriotism.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. I saw the Bob Costas interview, but I didn't actually watch it. So, I mean, I guess that's kind of a lucky overlap there. But ultimately, you know, patriotism is just – it's just, to me, it's having pride in your nation and wanting to make it a better place. And these guys, it's what they want to do. I mean – just when people say they're oppressed, I don't think us as the majority have a right to dictate what is and is not oppressed. When these people talk, when black people, when people of color say to us, we have a problem, we, you know, we feel like we are not being treated equally, I don't think we should be dismissive about it. We need to be able to listen, right or wrong, no matter what their case might be. Really, you should reserve that judgment for when they make an argument about it, for when they are, you know, they tell you what is wrong. And I think a lot of problem today, we see this patriotism, You know, it borders for some people almost on like jingoism, you know, like aggressive patriotism. And people who are just like, this is our flag, this is our country, if you don't like it, get out. But the problem with that is that is so hypocritical to what the idea of America is. It's not about forcing people out. It's not about kicking people out who don't agree with you. It's about trying to understand those people and trying to create a better harmony for everybody so that everyone can get along. And, you know, is that always easy? Of course not. It's hard. Ideologies, you know, when you learn them, when you're socialized from an early age, I mean, it's imprinted in you. It's who you are. And, you know, to change fundamentally who you are sometimes, it's very difficult.
Go ahead. Yeah, I think that, well, what the question that you essentially were raising then is, and this was kind of another guy who put this, I think, put it eloquently in the last couple of days, was Nick Wright on FS1. And he basically said, you know, I would just ask you, you know, if you are, you know, if you're upset by these protests about, you know, Kaepernick's not in the league, he's not the one doing this anymore. If you're upset by any of these protests, the real question is, are you upset because of disrespect to the flag, or are you upset because of the uncomfortable nature of what these players are protesting? Because, you know, if we want to talk about disrespecting the flag, I learned this in the last couple of days. I didn't realize there's all these flag code violations about, you know, apparently.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, apparently it's a violation to hold a flag horizontally or to put it on shirts. And I guarantee, you know, I don't want to make assumptions here, but I would just guess that a lot of the people who scream, you know, stand up for the flag, you're disrespecting us, a good amount of those people, I'm sure, have got flags, you know, all over their T-shirts at home. And, you know, I don't know if that's a stretch to say that, but I think – are you upset about the flag being disrespected, or are you – I think it's a legitimate question – or are you upset about what they're protesting?
You know, and again, it's hard to speak for everybody. Everybody has their own reasons. But, you know, the flag is something that – it does mean something. I mean, I don't like to say – to the stretch of some people where people say, oh, this doesn't mean anything, this is just a piece of cloth. To a degree, that is true, but there's also part of like – you know, you need to have an identity to be able, you know, I don't think a society can thrive without having an identity to rally under. The United States, in general, it has a pretty good philosophy. It's land of the free, home of the brave, you know, and it's to that, and, you know, to that effect, it's, I think it is, you know, it is true. You know, there are a lot of, this country is a lot more free and has a lot more, is a lot more advanced than a lot of our countries, but and a lot of people, they take that and they just ramp it up to 100%, and they say, this nation is perfect. And that's where it ends for me. To me, this country is not perfect. No country is perfect. It's about taking in your surroundings, all of your surroundings, not just the ones you're familiar with, the ones, you know, like you said, are uncomfortable, you know, that might be unfamiliar to you, and just try and take that and see, all right, how can this play into the bigger scheme of things? And So I think that's the problem that a lot of people are having, like you said. I don't want this to sound apples to oranges, but it's like, you know, if you go to the doctor and you're diagnosed with a bad disease, that's uncomfortable to hear, but it's something you have to hear if you want to fix it. And, you know, you can choose to be diagnosed with cancer and you can say like, oh, well, I'll be fine. I mean, well, you might be fine, but I mean, it probably would serve you better to listen to other people on the subject to make sure that you indeed will be fine. I mean, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. And I think that there's, you know, many angles we could take talking about this. And I think you're right. I mean, the starting point is you have to listen to each other. And I don't think, just personally speaking, I don't think that the, I guess the behavior of, or the, you know, last night we saw the Cardinals and the Cowboys played, and the Cowboys all took a knee before the anthem and then rose. And we saw today the president tweeted that basically applauding, and I quote, great anger that the fans showed by booing them while they were kneeling before the anthem. And to me, I don't think that kind of anger stoking helps anyone listen to each other. If you do listen to each other and we get to this point where we're having a conversation, you talked about how some people might think, well, the country's perfect. Well, let's say you can acknowledge that the country isn't perfect. I still think playing devil's advocate again here, what if somebody says, well, why aren't you protesting about, and I don't necessarily agree with this, but what if someone says, why aren't they protesting about the violence against police as well? Or why aren't they protesting against inner city violence? You know, what do you say to that?
You know, and that's a thing, I mean, that's a common, you know, whataboutism. You know, it's something that we see a lot. Whataboutism, I mean, and I think the people that fail to escape people is that just because that those are problems, it's important to acknowledge that those are problems as well. This is not about that particular problem. Protests, you know, they can serve, you know, multiple arms, or they can, you know, it could just be a singular issue. And in this case, it's primarily about the oppression of Black people and the, you know, what they call the unjust, you know, murdering of, you know, of Black, of unarmed Black suspects and that sort of thing. And, you know, that's, again, just people just listen, hear this, and they just, because it's a minority, they just don't think of it as a huge issue, but a problem. You know, police, you know, police are killed on the line of duty, and they serve our country. It's important to respect them and honor them. And I don't think anyone here is saying that. I mean, of course, again, what you brought upon earlier, the Kaepernick and his socks, that can obviously hurt the issue. That's a talking point that people will raise in this protest thing. It's like, oh, well, why would she listen to Kaepernick? He was disrespecting the police. That's true. That's a mistake. And that's probably something that he should not have done, just because if you have problems with police, it's not something you should not degrade them for. It's something that you need to be, again, have an open and intelligent conversation about. So ultimately, it's just getting people to just break their myopicness and just seeing that this is just one issue as part of a whole bunch of issues that need to be solved. And this is just one particular avenue of accomplishing one. And just because you're focused on one doesn't mean you can't focus on others at the same time. Again, it's just one.
Yeah. It's very tough because, you know, I have veterans in my family. I have police in my immediate family that have been in, you know, and I don't think, you know, I've also read and heard players come out and say, when we take this knee, we're not saying we're anti-police. We're not saying we're anti-military. We're just trying to better the country. And that's where I think, you know, all those whatabouts come about. Am I right to say that if all those whatabouts come about, are you just making excuses for looking at this problem that you either don't want to talk about or you don't believe exists? I mean, is it fair to say that?
I believe it's 100% fair to say that. I see that as an excuse. It's, again, you see this issue, you don't want to acknowledge that it exists, and you just want to deflect it to one that you have a better familiarity with, one that you think has more clarity to you. And again, that's not the way to handle it.
Yeah, and it's tough because I do, you know, I don't have all these stats and figures and stuff to say to someone who says, well, why aren't they protesting this and this and this? And you know, Black people do have, you know, I don't know. I don't have all the facts and figures to throw at people. I just think that before we rush to say you're anti-American, you should, you know, they should be forced to stand, I think that it's worth considering what they're saying. And I don't know, I feel like I'm, you know, it depends on what market you're looking at or what group you're talking to. But, you know, sometimes I feel like a lot of people are in support of just listening and listening to them. And there's a big collective, especially because the president that we have in office has been voted into office, that probably feels completely otherwise. But the one thing that came to mind when you said, you know, the whatabouts, you know, one analogy, and I don't know if this is a perfect analogy. I've used it in talking to some family members too, and you know, to a little avail in some cases and more so in others. But, you know, it'd be like me, if my house is being attacked or is on fire, and I run for help in the neighborhood. And, you know, it'd be like if I get to, you know, Sally down the street and she says, well, wait a minute, Bob's house is being vandalized, you know, was vandalized last week. To me, it sounds like, you know, there's a problem happening now. And what if there is other problems? I still need help. I mean, does that sound reasonable?
I mean, this is a really good transition into what President Trump is tweeting about and what he's not tweeting about. There is this issue he perceives as disrespect to America, but meanwhile, there's something, there is a huge crisis going down in Puerto Rico right now, absolutely catastrophic damage, you know, loss of homes, loss of agriculture, all those other things that are happening in Puerto Rico due to the recent hurricane. And there's just been, I feel like this protest about the NFL has significantly taken away from that issue. It's and it goes back to the thing, there is a problem, but you know what? There's another problem happening too, and we need to be able to split our attention on that, because I think, honestly, the protests are important, you know, in just in general, not even for one particular side. It's just we need to be able to focus on other issues too, and not let it get a consumption. Yeah. Like these are Puerto Rican people. They need help. It's very dire down there, and it was just to me, I honestly would love to see some.
You there, Mike?
I'm good.
Oh, okay.
You hear me okay?
Yep, you're good.
Okay.
I think some Puerto Ricans need help right now.
Yeah, exactly. It's another problem. And, you know, you can choose to focus on our thing, but I think we can all agree right now that ultimately this protesting thing and President Trump going after it almost with, you know, a nonstop vigor. I mean, I think I saw a figure like how many times he tweeted about like the NFL like 17 times or something like that in the past like 3 days, and times about Puerto Rico, zero. In the terms of this, and just, you know, I'll be honest when I say it, I'm not a big fan of Trump and what he likes to do, but at the same time, I don't like to attack him. I'd like to be able to treat him with the dignity that the office of the president, you know, holds. So I just want to say respectfully, you know, just, you know, this is an important issue. Puerto Rico is a U.S. territory. These are U.S. citizens, and they need help. And I just think that ultimately you're focusing a little too much on this one issue and completely ignoring another.
Yeah, and that's the only reason why, you know, if you're wondering, you know, why am I listening to an, you know, why am I turning on a sports show or listening to an NFL podcast and we're talking about this? It's because, I mean, you have the president delving into this and making it a point, you know, and I don't want to, you know, I'm trying not to steer it too much into politics, but, you know, I think that if you can't agree that he's come out with, like you said, almost a vigor that is a lot more passionate than, say, he's talking about an issue like Puerto Rico or when we had people carrying Nazi signs in Charlottesville, you know.
Yeah, or in North Korea.
Yeah, or in North Korea. I mean, and he sure has used some harsh language towards North Korea. But, you know, for instance, the Charlottesville stuff, I mean, can anyone really sit and tell me that they're proud of the president, I guess, I don't want to say being tame about talking about white nationalists, but, you know, saying that there were some fine people on both sides and whatever. If you agree with that, that's fine. But now he comes off with language that please imagine if Barack Obama came out and swore and called anyone, let alone, you know, athletes who are peacefully protesting, the language that he used. I mean, it's we're talking about it because he's made it a conversation. And I guess, you know, moving forward, I think, you know, going back to the issue of do you want to talk about the uncomfortable nature, you know, let's just say we settle on the fact that some people they don't like the method. They'd rather them stand for the anthem when we're all together. That's fine. But can you moving past that, forget about the flag, they're doing it, let's just say, for the sake of the argument, they're using a wrong method. They're not going about it the right way. Then I would ask, well, what is the right way, first of all? And I'm not sure, you know, what was the right way for Martin Luther King to march down the streets? And
absolutely.
And then my second thing, the bigger thing is, if they're not doing it the right way, are they protesting about valid things? And how do we answer that question? I mean, and I'm sorry to keep going here. I saw Greg Popovich, Spurs coach, come out, and he very bold in his words, and I was very proud to hear him say this, that we still, whether it's uncomfortable or not, you know, maybe it makes you cringe when you listen to this, but, you know, you and I, Mike, we are both white males, and Greg Popovich is a white male. And he says we still have no idea as a society what it means being born white, the privileges that we have. And you know what? No, we don't have slavery now. But yes, there is privilege, and it takes an effort to look at that.
Yeah. Well, I just want to be able to start to say, again, this has turned political. It's, you know, it's But to me, I feel like it's unavoidable. People say we want sports to be free of politics, but the real truth of the matter is, in the modern social age, I believe the two are inseparable, honestly. You've seen throughout time, people, like, this is not the first time athletes have protested something, you know? I mean, you can look back to, you know, the famous Olympic photo of the black athlete raising his fist in power, you know, that sort of thing. This is not something new. And it's just, ultimately, people like to see these guys as entitled millionaires, but really, a lot of them are not. A lot of them come from poverty. A lot of them come from situations that are so much more deplorable than anything, you know, I think you or me have probably experienced in our lifetimes. I mean, well, that's not true for you, Cody. You were in Detroit. You did a Christian mission there. You know the plight of some of these people in the inner city and how bad it can be. You know, am I not correct?
Oh, yeah, sure. And, I mean, I just think, you know, and there are – that's – you know, very early in the discussion, I think some people will say, well, you're not oppressed. And then we have to realize they're not saying they are oppressed. They're talking about, you know, would people listen if the poor were protesting? I mean, they have this stage and they're using it. And I think, where was I going with this? Just that, you know, like you said, I don't mean to necessarily steer it to politics, but I think if you can't get past the argument about, you know, what are you actually upset about? And, you know, I'm sure, I mean, there are people in my family, you know, I had a conversation last night with a family member who they think they should be standing and it's disrespectful to the flag. And, you know, if we can accept that, I'd at least like to take the conversation to the next level about
yes.
Can we listen to what they're protesting about?
Yeah. I mean,
and, you know, the Greg Popovich comments and what I echoed from him, you know, maybe that is political, suggesting that there is some privilege and all this stuff involved. But I feel like it's a necessary part if we're going to move forward. I think that, again, quoting Nick Wright from FS1 who tackled this, you know, he said it almost comes off like, you know, if you're not upset about the flag – but you're upset about what they're protesting, it comes off like, you know, you black men should be grateful for where you are now. You know, you're not in slavery anymore. You're not, I mean, to me, I mean, I just rubs me the wrong way.
I mean, but again, it's just, I feel we get so lost in the entertainment, you know, part of things. People say sports are entertainment. They are paid for our entertainment. But you also need to understand, well, this is true. You know, it is a service that you pay for to watch them play football. But you also need to understand they are not tools. These people, they are not tools. They are not your entertainment playthings. They are real people. They are real people who come from real backgrounds, have real families. And I think, you know, it's important to be able to listen, you know, and before these guys, a lot of these guys, they grew up with nothing. And they had no one who cared about, you know, of course, you know, I don't mean to say that, of, you know what I mean. Just
sure.
From the outside world, of course, their families cared about them and everything. But a lot of these guys, they grew up from nothing, came up from areas where nobody thinks of. And now they have these cameras on them. Now they have journalists itching to talk to them. I mean,
yeah.
To me personally, I mean, if you have a strong sense of social justice, if you believe that you need to use the power that you have now, the power that, you know, a large majority of America would love to have, I mean, I feel like you'd have to utilize it. And these guys are. And again, it'll always circle back to, all right, well, they're using it. And, you know, how do we respond to that? And I
yeah.
feel like extinguish the fire that they stoke is not the appropriate way of handling it. And
yeah.
It's all about listening.
And you make a good point saying they're humans. And I mean, Dimitri and I have talked about this before. Just, I mean, you could take this into a whole nother spectrum as far as, you know, even sports.
Oh, you could take it into infinite directions. I mean, I, in college, I basically double majored in sociology. So I studied a lot in terms of, you know, how the racial power structure of not just America, but the world has been developed over years. And it's
sure.
so complicated. You could spend days, weeks.
Yeah.
Just talking about one particular part of that of that time spectrum. And just now we are at another particular part in time. And I think people have just don't see the complex nature of it really is. I think, you know, we humans, we like simple solutions to complex problems. And sometimes, you know, that might serve as a buffer, but ultimately there are times like this where we need to be able to open up our minds and be able to take in research and information from all sides, because it's all valid.
Yeah, you said we like simple solutions, and I think that's, you see that when you're just watching a game. You know, it's very easy to want to just, you know, especially in the world of social media. I mean, everything comes out quick. It's very impulsive, and we see it where, you know, we're talking about players that they are also human beings. And again, the black and white thing, I mean, Buffalo Bills linebacker Lorenzo Alexander, when he was explaining why he took a knee on Sunday, he was saying, you know, we don't necessarily want to be put into a box. We don't, you know, I don't want it to be just that I'm either, you either hate America or you love America. I mean, can you be both? Can you take the knee and still love your country? And unfortunately, I don't think some people can see it that way. Even in a gesture as simple, although profound, as taking a knee. And another, not that this, you know, I think the root of these protests was to try and stir change for social reform. Couple of things, the way it's escalated, you know, we almost forget this is a peaceful protest. This isn't guys marching in the streets, throwing bricks through stores. And also, I don't think a lot of, you know, we saw 200 plus players, you know, owners come down and link arms and some guys take a knee. And I don't think a lot of that would have happened if Donald Trump wouldn't have come out and said, basically, that free speech needs to be silenced. You know, I think it was more a response to that. But again, the root of it is the reform. And it's not, you know, some people say, well, you know what, they should go out, they should get off their knees or get off their butts and go do stuff. But you have to take the time to research.
A lot of them do.
Yeah, I mean,
a lot of them do.
LeBron James has built, I'm pretty sure he's built a school. I mean, I think, you know, I know the Eagles because I cover the, you know, follow the Eagles. Malcolm Jenkins, I mean, they've spent time meeting with, you know, law enforcement, going to work with legislators. I mean, this isn't just, they're trying to start the conversation.
Yeah, with Buccaneers, Vincent Jackson, former wide receiver, huge proponent of the military, had his own charity, did constant things around the Tampa Bay, St. Petersburg area, you know, helping veterans and all, and, you know, and all other people in military walks of life. These, you know, people like these players, it's true of anybody. You can't just take one part, expand it as the whole. Like these guys, the traces that you see, that's not the whole of who they are. And
yeah, it's not just a black and white picture. And I think that another question I saw posed, you know, if you are kind of in that wing of where you equate patriotism to the military, and again, like somebody like Vincent Jackson, maybe very pro-military, would it have looked different if Colin Kaepernick came out and said, when he first started protesting, he said, I don't like the way veterans are being treated when they come back and they don't get, you know, the proper health care, the proper benefits, and he took a knee. Would they, you know, would a lot of people, would you still say you're disrespecting the flag if he took the knee for veterans?
Yeah, that's another interesting way to paint it, and another big issue in this country and the homeless veterans. It makes up a very significant chunk of what is already a devastatingly huge, homeless population. So it's, again, and I just wanted to finish my point from earlier just about, you know, anger and not making it black and white. Just these people who are angry about the protests, who are angry about the flag, you know, they're all people too. And I think that people who are defending the protests, some people can lose sight of that as well. And, you know, why I don't, you know, on Twitter, you're not seeing me viciously attacking people who are attacking the protests, because that doesn't solve anything. That's not fair. These are people. I'm sure that a lot of these guys are not, like, certainly not all these people are irreprehensible, you know, white supremacists, you know, all that other stuff, you know, and some, you know what, that might be true for some of them. Unfortunately, I, you know, that is probably a truth for some of them, but you know what, I really don't think it's all of them. And it doesn't do well, you know, if they want to have an open conversation about it, then you should engage them as well, you know, and some of them don't. And again, but it can go on the same on other sites too. It's just,
yeah,
just to
I think
be able to look at it from everywhere.
That's, to be honest, I think that's almost where we should try and conclude this conversation. I think it needs to be in that you have to empathize with both sides, and that includes the side that is very anti-protest. And I'm not sure it's a challenging thing to do because, you know, just as it's challenging to look at the president's words, some of the things he's done in a positive light, it needs to be done. I mean, you have to be able to look at both sides. Otherwise, you're walling yourself off. You're backing yourself into a corner. You know, maybe you get fired up about your own beliefs, but you're never going to come back together. And so, yeah, I mean, because I know that, you know, especially, I don't know if this is true or not, but I would imagine that maybe the younger generation is a little more accepting of the protests. And I think for a lot of
issues, I think there's a big age divide. I think that's another part of it. Just
yeah.
A generational difference, a generational gap.
But you're absolutely correct. I think that going on to Twitter and responding to people with insults or pointing out people's flaws, you know, that's only going to fuel the flames as much as, say, a president calling out players for peacefully protesting is going to fan the flames. I mean, no one, you know, an eye for an eye here. We're all going to be blind. That's, you know, the motto.
Yeah.
And
that's a very good way of putting it.
But it is a challenge for to kind of say, hey, we should listen to these guys, but also understand that the method is not pleasing to everyone. I mean, it's very challenging.
No, but again, that's how countries are built. You're not always going to like the person who, you know, who you're digging next to, but guess what? You're all digging. You're all trying to make this place better. You know, you can have your own reasons for that, but ultimately it should be the end result should be something that benefits, you know, everybody.
Yeah. So you've pretty much already given these answers as we've talked, but just kind of wrapping up, last thing for you. And again, this is Mike Kiwok, Watertown Daily Times from New York, a good friend of mine, former classmate. Just want to ask you, if you could give a piece of advice to the people that support the protests and the people who are very much against the protests, I mean, what would you leave them with? I mean, what do you say? How do we move forward from here? For both the sides.
Well, first I'll start with the anti-protest side of the question. America is a good place. It is not North Korea. It is not the Philippines. This is a place where people, you can walk openly, and generally you can have pleasant conversations with people of all walks of life. And unfortunately, that's something that a lot of people do lose sight about. I love America. I was part of the Boy Scouts for more than 10 years. I stood at attention for the flag. I gave my Boy Scout salute every time. And you know what? And I would do it again. I care about this country. I actively donate toward causes, helping its environment, helping its homeless people. I love America. And I just, like we talked about before, it's about not just the flag being about the military. You know, I care about the military too. I've donated to military causes as well. And, you know, a lot of other people who support these protests do too. And you need to be able to see that just because through this method does not mean that they hate everything that America is. Ultimately, who are doing that is truly the most un-American action you can do, whether you realize it or not. This country is not about kicking people out. This flag is not about saying who gets to do what and you telling them what to do it just because you don't like it. You know, you just need to be open and understand that these are more this is just more complex than bleeding red, white, and blue. It's about bleeding the same blood as everybody else. And
right.
In terms of the pro crowd, you know, you cannot coffin corner these people, the people who do love the flag, as just simpletons, you know, people who are blinded by their patriotism. Is this true in some cases? Yes. But it's also not, you know, okay, these are people who love America and don't love anything else. You've made that conclusion. Where else do you go from here? Again, it's just treat people how you would like to be treated. I don't want, you know, if I talk to somebody on the street today and they ask me about protests, I'll be honest with them. And, you know, whoever, you know, they might react negatively to that, but I don't want to just degrade it into lobbing of insults and whataboutism. It's about being able to say, okay, well, can we talk about it a little bit? And that's pretty much the message. It needs to be, you know, it's been repeated a lot during this conversation, but I think it's one that needs to be repeated over and over again, because you just need to be able to say it until people are listening to it, not hearing it.
Yeah. I mean, again, probably a lot of things we've suggested are easier said than done for us as well. And I think no matter what side you fall on, like Mike said, I mean, it takes empathy, and it is certainly hard when you start to, I guess, try and defend your cause, but it does take, hey, can I put myself in this person's shoes? Can I put myself in the shoes of someone who does have a very strong, you know, maybe it's a military background, they love the flag, they've never, you know, not stood for the flag. And can I put myself in the shoes of someone who maybe has seen firsthand injustice? And
yes.
Whether there's injustice against cops or military or white people, they are still trying to share their injustice. And, you know, I've heard some people say, well, you know, I experienced, you know, coming from a white perspective, I've experienced something wrong. Well, I didn't go out and protest. Well, I don't know if that's the solution to anything. I mean, like you said, you have to, maybe you have experienced something wrong, but these people are sharing something, and it takes some empathy, you know, both sides. So, again, we could talk about this for, like you said, from the sociology perspective, too. I mean, you could talk about it forever, and this actually went quite a bit longer than I expected. I appreciate you hanging on here and talking about it. I mean, again, it's not fun, you know, sports in one sense is an escape from this kind of stuff, but when it becomes such a pressing issue, I mean, when every single team has demonstrated in some form, you know, this is a headline and it needs to be talked about. So
definitely. That's our job as journalists. We need to be able to stoke conversation. That's what it's all about. And I loved coming on here and talking about it. Like I said, I have not made my thoughts largely known on the issue. I hope that, you know, some people will hear it, and, you know, I hope our conversation will, you know, help enlighten some people. That's always good. And, and just expand the conversation.
Right. That's what it's all about. I mean, we got to be able to talk. I mean, and maybe we can disagree on in this instance, maybe the method, maybe it's other things, but it's just, it is, like you said, a matter of moving forward, you know, having a bridge to further conversation and understanding people.
I'm sorry. Yeah, I hope, I hope if some people do listen to this and they challenge what we have to say. You know, I certainly don't want to create this echo chamber where we both bounce these ideas like, oh, yeah, we're so right, and, you know, and get
and that's why I wanted to bring that. Yeah, that's why I wanted to bring those other perspectives, like how do you what if I do care that much about the flag and all that stuff? I just think, like you said, lost in all of this, or I guess what's been created out of all this, is a lot of that black and white trying to fill one little box or the other, where it's like you want to say, well, you're violating the flag, or you hate America, or you're racist. I mean, you know, it's very more complex than that. And
absolutely.
It's certainly, like we said, we went back and forth on Twitter a couple of times last night. That's the only thing we talked about before this. And I think that's what led to this conversation, because you can't handle this in 140 characters or a Facebook post.
Nope.
And I mentioned that, unfortunately, and I just think social media, and you can get a whole other round. We can talk another hour about how, can or it can
be, detractive from the issue. I mean, and how it's formatted and how people, interact on social media. It's like you can go into a huge conversation about that, but I'll save that for another day or else we'll be talking. This podcast will be 4 hours long and you won't even get to the actual football yet.
Yeah, you're right. Well, I guess with that, we should wrap it up. But I really, again, appreciate you coming on here. Again, this is Mike Kiwok, IUP alumnus. He writes for the Watertown Daily Times in New York. You can follow Mike on Twitter. I believe it's at Mike, and then is it double underscore or just one underscore, Kiwok?
It's just one underscore, Kiwok, K-I-W-A-K. If you want to listen to me complain about the Cubs and, you know, and the other Buccaneers-related things, I mean, you can give me a follow. I'll follow back.
But, all right. Well, thanks a lot for coming on, Mike. I think we did have a very intelligent conversation for as long as it went. So I appreciate you coming on.
I think so, too. I hope we don't – I hope it doesn't come off as rambling. I hope I sound articulate. But anyway, thanks for having me. I hope that I'm able to come back and we could talk about some actual more sports at another time. That would be – I think a lot of people would enjoy that also. I know
We'll have to touch it on the Buccaneers at some point.
We'll see how the next couple weeks go.
Yes. All right, Mike. Well, thanks for coming on. We'll talk to you later.
All right, Cody. Thanks.
All right. Yep. All right. We're going to switch gears and talk some real football. And for that, we bring in none other than my co-host, Dimitri George, live from New Jersey. Dimitri, how are we?
Cody, we're fired up. And you know I'm fired up, so let's get this thing rolling.
Let's get it rolling. We got 16 burning questions, one question from every game in week three before we head into week four and take a look at some of those games. Let's just jump right into it. Let's go back to Thursday. The Rams beat the 49ers 41-39. Whoever thought it would be that score. But my question here, looking ahead, do the Rams beat Dallas in week four?
No, they do not. I think the Dallas Cowboys take care of business at home against the Rams. I like what the Rams are doing. I think the progression of Goff is evident. Like I said, maybe a lazy narrative by me last year, really kind of throwing him under the bus. But I love what McVay's doing there. I think they have a lot of they're actually a fun team to watch, especially offensively. But ultimately, I think they'll run into a Dallas team that looks like they got back on track last night against the Arizona Cardinals. So I like the Dallas Cowboys in that one.
All right, jumping over to London, the Jaguars beat up on the Ravens 44-7. Which was more deceiving in this game, the Jags scoring 44 or the Ravens scoring 7? In other words, which team was more like themselves in London?
I think the Ravens, honestly. I don't think their offense is good at all. I think they really are dependent on their defense playing, you know, shutdown defense, which over the first two games they had, but not on Sunday when they gave up 44 to the Jacksonville Jaguars. But again, ultimately, it's not surprising that they only scored 7 points because I don't think too highly of their offense. So to me, the Ravens were more like themselves, and they're going to be it's going to be a struggle for them offensively throughout the whole year.
Yeah, and then with Jeremy Maclin now in concussion protocol, I mean, just another, I guess, loss. I didn't get any update on that yet. Buffalo beat the Broncos, an upset there, 26-16. Interesting question I got for you here. Tyrod Taylor or Trevor Siemian, who are you taking?
Oh, wow.
Yeah, put you on the spot in that one.
Yeah, you did.
I mean, and again, we're not holding you to this.
Right. Well, no, you can. I'm going to go Tyrod. I love what Trevor Siemian's doing, but you can't deny the weapons that he has around him. Not to say that that's the sole reason that he's been playing well, but to me, I love what Tyrod. I love his, you know, his ability to be able to, you know, move the pocket, use his legs. We obviously know he can throw the vertical ball. I mean, he's got, you know, a rookie receiver in Zay Jones. He's got Jordan Matthews, who they acquired from Philadelphia. We already talked about off the air about how their receiving corps seems to be, you know, all on the Rams or the 49ers. So to me, if you're asking me straight up, Trevor Siemian, Tyrod Taylor, I think I'm taking Tyrod Taylor, but that's a very close. It's a great question, but I'm leaning towards Tyrod.
I think I'd lean the same. I think I need just a little bit more of a body of work from Trevor Siemian, even with Tyrod's limitations. The Saints, a divisional showdown, they beat the Carolina Panthers 34-13. Cam Newton, 3 picks in that game. The question is, do you trust Cam Newton to right the ship?
I do. I know that you and I have talked about Cam off the air, even on the air, but I ultimately think that he has all the talent in the world to be able to right the ship here. I don't think that...
But does he have the decision-making?
You can question it. I get it. And sometimes, you know, some of his throws, you kind of really scratch your head. But and with Kelvin Benjamin going down with a knee injury, you know, that's obviously going to hurt. You know, I get it. There's concerns. But I ultimately think Cam can do it. We've seen him do it before. And I think he can bounce back. I think he'll be able to, make better throws, make better decisions, and put his offense and his team in more opportune situations. I think he'll get it together.
Here's the one you wanted. The Bears edge the Steelers. I wrote down 23-17. Was it 23 or 24?
23-17.
Yeah, 23-17.
In overtime.
Now, my question here, and you can give your little talk, but, you know, keep it somewhat bottled up so we can move on here. But my question for this is, you said last week, I asked you, when would the Steelers get their first loss? And it was predicated on the fact that they were going to beat the Bears. But you said they would lose to Baltimore if they were going to lose. And my question is the same. Somewhat. Who wins Baltimore-Pittsburgh next week?
Well, a lot of people, when the Ravens lost the way they did in London, said, wow, the Steelers are really going to get a fired-up Ravens team.
Or a beaten-down Ravens, team.
Exactly. And I think the Ravens are going to get somewhat of the same. Maybe a little bit different circumstances. The Steelers did lose on Sunday. They didn't stop the run. They didn't tackle well. Another poor offensive performance. But with all the off-the-field stuff, with the national anthem, how they handled it, how it might have been butchered, I think you're going to see a team that really wants to show that they are united. Not that they didn't come off as so, but obviously with the Villanueva being detached from the team and the pictures that came out, clearly it upset them with the fact that they had captains and Villanueva come out. Even Mike Tomlin addressed some of it. And I tweeted about it. You have to appreciate the accountability. They are very transparent, as Mike Tomlin said, about the whole situation. So when you look at this football game, because that's what it is, a football game that's coming up on Sunday in Baltimore. First of all, it's the best rivalry in football. It's not the oldest like the Bears and the Packers, but it's the best rivalry because of the quality of games year in and year out. I look at the Pittsburgh Steelers and I say, what's their identity on offense? They have all the weapons again. Martavis is back. They've added Juju. Le'Veon's back in the fold. Their whole offensive line's returned, even a little banged up now. And you're saying, what's going on? Why aren't they scoring 30 points a game like they think they can? And I think it's an identity issue. I don't think they know exactly how they want to utilize all their weapons. So even with all of that bad, energy around the Steelers right now, I just think right now, with all of that, they are the better football team. They're the healthier football team, even though they got a little banged up in the Bear game. They're a healthier football team than the Ravens. And quite honestly, like I said, to me, if the Steelers are able to score 20 points, which I know they are only able to do once in the first twice and out of the first three games, barely. Their offense only scored 14, really, against Cleveland in week one. If they're able to score 20 points, I think they can go into Baltimore and get a win. Because I don't think the Ravens' offense is good at all, as I've already mentioned. And I think the Steelers' defense, while they didn't look great, especially against that zone running scheme against Chicago, you look at the Ravens, I don't think, they lost to Marshall Yanda they had 2 weeks ago. It's huge for them. I mean, he's their best offensive lineman, probably the best guard in the game. So I think the Ravens are going to have a hard time moving the ball against the Steelers. And I think if the Steelers can put some drives together and put some touchdowns on the boards and not field goals, I think they'll escape Baltimore with a win. And I want everybody to know that after week three and a 2-1 record, that means they won more games than they've lost out of the first 3 weeks. That does not mean that the season's already over and you can classify the Steelers as pretenders or contenders. You can't classify a team as a pretender or contender after 3 weeks, because if you do, you're nuts. Because it's just there's so much football left to be played. So my biggest frustration after Sunday was that after one loss to an NFC opponent, that they should have probably beaten on the road, that everyone wants to jump the ship and say the season's over. That just drives me nuts. Could it come back to bite them? It could. Do we know that? No. No one knows what's going to happen over the next 13 games. So everyone needs to pump the brakes. I like the Steelers in this game against Baltimore solely on the fact that the Ravens' offense stinks, and the fact that the Steelers have just enough to get by. They will have to start playing better offensively consistently, but for this week, you're asking me, I think they'll be able to get it done in Baltimore because I think they have enough juice to go in there and steal a win.
Very well said. I think we all know why you cover and follow the Steelers. My one question would be, and I think, you know, what you said, we don't want to spend too much time on just this game, but what you said about, you know, pump the brakes, I mean, we can apply that to every single team. I mean, maybe certain teams that are 0-3 right now, it looks a little different. But, again, they're 2-1. Even if they're 1-2, I mean, again, yeah, we're 3 weeks into the season. That's why we play six. Go ahead.
Exactly. The thing is, whether the Steelers win 21-20 or 40-10, it's still a W in the column. You know, like Mike Tomlin said a long time ago, people get too preoccupied with style points. You know, this isn't the BCS. They don't have to. Well, they don't have to win with style and distinguish themselves.
I mean, here's the bottom line. In a couple of months, I mean, if the Steelers are Super Bowl champions, no one cares what the heck happened.
Exactly.
In week three.
That's why I said to you a week ago or a couple of days ago. I said, if the Steelers go and win the Super Bowl, no one's going to give a damn about the fact that they lost to the Bears in week three. No one.
You're preaching to the choir here. We know this can apply to every team. My one thing, just my parting comment here about the Steelers finding their identity. I think it's a valid point. The one thing from a fan perspective, I think I would wonder is they had all off season to try and figure out an identity. And again, things change during the season, but you know, like you said, I think even if they're still trying to find that identity, they have enough to get past Baltimore. And again, if people want to read more, Dimitri does cover the Steelers for Pro Football Spot. So, you know, log on there, profootballspot.com. He's got more coverage on them. Jumping ahead, Atlanta snuck by the Lions 30-26. The game ended on kind of a crazy call. But my question deals with the extension they handed to Jim Caldwell. Do you vote yay or nay on that extension?
Man, I guess I vote yay.
Not a very hearty yay there.
No, it's not. Not anything against Caldwell personally, but I think he's an underachiever a little bit. I mean, he took the Colts to the Super Bowl, but let's face it, he inherited that team really from Tony Dungy. Peyton Manning obviously helps a lot, but you know, kudos to him. Kudos to the Lions for finding some consistency and some stability. Caldwell, I think, is a good football coach. I just, you know, I don't know if he's the coach that can get them over the top and, you know, into, you know, a deep playoff run. I think they have the quarterback. Obviously, he's paid as, like, one with Matt Stafford, but I don't know if I, you know.
They're in that weird place where they haven't exactly done a whole lot in the playoffs, but yet – they've also found a lot more a stability than they've ever had, you know, for a while. So, I mean, I like the move. I still don't know if they're a team that finishes, but we'll see. Indianapolis edges the Colts 31-28. That was without Andrew Luck and Scott Tolzien. My question is, when Andrew Luck comes back, are the Colts competitive?
Yeah, I think competitive.
I think previously you said they're pretty bad.
Yeah, they are pretty bad. That's what I was going to say. You know, are they competitive? So that mean they're in every game that they play, or are they competitive where they're making runs at the Super Bowl or at the playoffs at the very least?
Yeah, I mean competitive like they're going to push for the division.
No, I don't think that's the case at all. I think they'll be competitive. I think the offense will put up points. I just don't think they're a good overall football team. And I think Andrew Luck can carry a football team. I just think there's so much that's needed on that roster that he won't be able to shoulder that. And I think the Colts will still, like I said, they'll be competitive. They'll put up points. They'll be in pretty much all their games because of Andrew Luck. But I just don't think they'll be able to overcome all their deficiencies.
We're running through burning questions from week three of the NFL. Speaking of putting up points, the Vikings with Case Keenum did that against the Buccaneers, winning 34-17. Everyone kind of knows the Packers are playoff material, or at least assumes that's the case. Which of the other NFC North teams is for real? The Lions, the Bears, or the Vikings? Not an easy question to answer.
Know. I like...
What's your gut feeling right now?
Listen, the Bears won, obviously, on Sunday, but I'm not putting them in the conversation. You know, with Minnesota. I love their defense. I mean, their offense, we've seen what they can do, especially week one. It's so disheartening that Sam Bradford's got this bone bruise or whatever's going on with his knee. But give credit to Case Keenum, who came out firing against Tampa Bay. And Detroit, you know, they are an inch or a foot away from beating the Falcons and being 3-0 themselves. So if you had to put it, because of the I know what I'm getting with the quarterback position in Detroit, I'll go with the Detroit. If I had some clarity on what the Minnesota Vikings is situation at quarterback, because it's apparently Teddy Bridgewater is going to be ready to come off the PUP as soon as he's eligible. So the uncertainty of what's going to be going on, I mean, we don't know what we're going to get from
Teddy.
Yeah,
there's
a
lot of
year and a half
up in the
off.
Air. Yeah.
So I'll go with Detroit.
Probably the safe pick there. New England sneaks past the Texans, 36-33. Talk about a shootout there. What was more impressive, Deshaun Watson going neck for neck with the Patriots, or Tom Brady at age 40? I know you love Tom Brady, but Tom Brady at age 40 playing the way that he did.
It's no doubt Deshaun Watson.
Jeez.
You know, I mean, you know, you want me to give credit to Tom Brady at 40 years old, yet he's at home against a rookie quarterback, and he's got to get a last-second touchdown to beat the rookie quarterback. It's no doubt Deshaun Watson. And obviously the entire game is not his fault, Tom Brady, that is. You know, he's not giving up 33 points to a rookie quarterback, but he did have the pick six that is Jadeveon Clowney. But Deshaun Watson, give him credit. I mean, you can see he kind of has that it factor. You know, he's kind of – if the moment's not too big for him, I mean, he's just going to continue to get better. And I thought Sunday was a real confidence booster for him, and I think he'll be able to build off that.
I think you made a good point. I mean, I just think that Tom Brady is – he's still at the top of his game, and we can see it, Tom Brady. But you made a good point there. The Jets, we all thought they were going 0-16. They beat the Dolphins 20-6. Adam Gase came out and said he's tired of the Dolphins, and I quote, garbage offense. I'm not so sure it's a lock for Miami against the Saints in week four. Who are you taking if you had to pick that game right now?
Miami to New Orleans?
Yeah.
It's in New Orleans?
I believe so.
I'll go New Orleans. I know I'm big on Miami, and I still think they'll make the playoffs. But I'll go with New Orleans. I thought they put a good showing on Sunday against Carolina on the road. I think they get home.
I'm sorry. This is a London game.
London. That's right. You're right. It's 9:30 a.m. on Fox.
Yeah.
Insane.
Early in the morning.
I still like New Orleans. I think this actually will be a really good game. Actually. I think it'll be a close game, but I like New Orleans to edge it out. It looks like Lawrence Timmons has been reinstated for the Dolphins, and he'll play Sunday against the Saints. Miami is technically the home team, but I still like New Orleans to get a win down in London.
The Eagles beat the Giants 27-24 on a last-second franchise record, 61-yard field goal by Jake Elliott, who just came off the Bengals practice squad the other week. Right. Carson Wentz loved it. My question last week was, the Giants have to be done at 0-2. And my question again now, are the Giants done now?
The Giants done at 0-3. They're certainly in a deep hole. I mean, you look at the NFC East, you've got the Redskins, who are 2-1, the Eagles are 2-1. And the Cowboys are now 2-1. The Giants are 0-3. I mean, they've got an uphill battle, and it doesn't get any easier with a trip to Tampa Bay on Sunday.
And their line is still not the greatest.
It's still not. No, I don't see it getting better anytime soon. I'm not going to go out and say that they're done, but they're close. The nail is almost in the coffin. I mean,
I might ask you every single week until you rule the Giants dead, but. That's fair.
I'm telling you, I'm not ready to do it.
No, that's fine.
They're close. I mean, they're pushing it.
Yeah, you can't be any closer at 0-3. Tennessee beat the Seahawks. I think you at least thought that would be the case last week. They beat them 33-27. At 1-2, how concerned are you if you're Seattle?
I think you have to be concerned. The way the Titans are able to move the ball and score points. Another offensive line that's not great. I mean, Russell Wilson had himself a good game against Tennessee in terms of numbers. But, you know, I think you have to be concerned. I mean, I think they'll get back on track this week. I think they host the Colts on Sunday Night Football at home. I think if they can get their confidence up and really win in a situation to win again, style points don't matter. But if they're able to put up a nice performance against the Colts and put some points up and really swarm after Jacoby Brissett and company, I think they can get back on track. But I think there is a little bit of a concern for the Seahawks with their first couple performances, especially the fact that they only were able to beat the 49ers at home 12-9, I believe the final score was.
Yeah.
So it looks, they're struggling out the gate here, but you know, we'll see what happens. But I think there is a little bit of concern there.
Yeah, credit Russell Wilson for still making some plays in that game. The Bengals fall to 0-3. They lose 27-24 to the Packers. I think I know the answer to this question, but it's not the question you're expecting. Take one quarterback for the rest of the season, Tom Brady or Aaron Rodgers?
Tom Brady or Aaron Rodgers. Give me
– just for the rest of this year.
No.
Yikes.
Give me Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
Give me Aaron Rodgers. I mean, Tom Brady's putting up some numbers, but it's going to be hard. For, I mean, everyone's going to say it's never hard for Tom Brady, but it's going to be hard if he's going to have to put up, you know, the ridiculous numbers that he's putting up so far in the last two games, especially for the Patriots to be able to win. Same with the could be said about Aaron Rodgers. The Packers defense is not great. And he had to come from behind on Sunday. But, you know, I love Aaron Rodgers. I love his arm. He can make every throw. He's mobile. He can move. He can make every throw. He can do good decisions. He's a leader. I'll take Aaron Rodgers, and I'm not even questioning it.
All right. The Chiefs are the last undefeated team in the AFC. They beat the Chargers 24-10. My question, Kareem Hunt has to be the early season favorite for MVP, doesn't he? I'll read you his numbers here quickly. Through three starts, he's got 400 yards, 401 yards on the ground, 137 receiving. He's averaging 8.5 yards per carry and has scored 6 touchdowns. That's through three games.
I mean, yeah. I mean, for 13 games left to be played. I mean, if you want to answer the question, yeah, I mean, yeah, then he's the favorite to win the MVP. But you know, still a lot of football to be played. We'll still have to be seen. So if he hits a rookie wall, or once there's more tape on how to defend the Chiefs with him in the offense, you know, we'll see how he responds to that. Not that he's not capable of adjusting to when defenses kind of have a game plan for him. But yes, he is the early favorite for MVP in my opinion.
Washington 27-10 over Oakland. Raiders at Broncos next week. Who's that?
Raiders, Broncos. It's in Denver. Both teams coming off disappointing performances, especially Oakland. But I think they get it done on the road. I think they go into Denver. I think it's going to be a hard-fought, classic AFC West matchup. And I think Oakland is able to go into Denver and just put up just enough points against that Denver defense. And get it done. I think it's going to be close, though, because I think when you look at it, Amari Cooper's banged up. Michael Crabtree banged up a little bit with a chest injury of some sort in the Sunday night game. You know, they're a little banged up. And, of course, going into that secondary in Denver, it's going to be a challenge. But I think Oakland can get it done.
Last night, Dallas 28-17 over Arizona, but the Cardinals kept it close. Did Bruce Arians lose this game for Arizona? A lot goes into a game. I'm not just going to put blame on one person. But if you look at the last, I mean, the Cardinals were coming up there, and he chose to, who's to say they're going to make the field goal and get an onside kick at the end? But basically, they chose to go for it on fourth down, fourth and goal, needing two scores. And so, you know, you could have kicked a field goal and had a shot at an onside kick at the end. Also wasted a challenge.
Right. Well, no, you can talk about the challenges, and rightfully so. But, I mean, if you're going by percentages and the numbers, I mean, yeah, then kick the field goal and try to get the onside kick because, like you said, ultimately you need two scores anyways. But hey, but you never know. So I'm not gonna say he lost the game. Hindsight's 2020. We don't know, or we don't. Not the hindsight 2020, but we don't know if they were gonna get the onside kick. Would I have kicked the field goal? Yes, but I don't think that's the sole reason that they lost the game.
Well, one reason they could have won the game was Larry Fitzgerald, and apparently he's still playing like he's in his youth. I mean, did you see the catch?
Anybody saw that he did. He just led the league last year in receptions.
I know, but you forget that.
This year. You don't forget it. If you forget it, then you're sleeping under a rock then.
Well, I know, but I'm saying you forget that. I mean, I think we had this conversation before. I said maybe it wasn't on here, but how I remember in 2008 when he was tearing it up in the playoffs, and that was now almost 10 years ago, and he was like the at the peak there.
He was, and I mean that was a sight to see. Really, both receivers in the Super Bowl that year, Santonio Holmes and Larry Fitzgerald. You probably remember Larry Fitzgerald's playoff run that year because he was just unstoppable.
Yeah.
But Santonio Holmes had himself quite the postseason that year. Obviously, Larry Fitzgerald. You know, but couldn't agree more. Larry Fitzgerald.
Yeah.
Is a first ballot Hall of Famer in my book.
So just to, you know, head into next week. Got a couple of games. Some of them you already picked, but you said you didn't like Chicago and Green Bay as much as other people do. But why don't you just, I mean, pick one gut feeling now, Chicago or Green Bay?
I like Green Bay at home. I do think that the Bears got some confidence with their first one against Pittsburgh on Sunday. Having to go on the road, though, they only completed one pass to a receiver on Sunday, and that's, you know, I don't think that's going to happen again. Where they can go into Green Bay and have that happen and be able to, you know, walk out of there with a win. Mike Glennon's going to have to get his confidence going in the passing game if they want to have any chance. Because I do think they'll be able to run the ball a little bit on Green Bay, but Green Bay is going to be too much for them.
Carolina at New England, maybe this is a chance for Cam to, you know, against a defense that surrendered 30 points to the Texans. Maybe he's got a chance to light it up.
He does, and I think, you're talking about Cam. He loves the spotlight. He loves playing in big games. So this is a good opportunity for him. He can right the ship. Does it happen on Sunday? I could see a scenario where Cam plays really well, but the Carolina Panthers still lose. So I'll go with New England, but I do think Cam has a really good game.
Detroit at Minnesota. Don't know if Sam Bradford's going to be there or not, but even if it is Case Keenum, who are you taking there?
I'm going to Detroit.
They're your team, man.
You know,
I've seen them.
I just like their team. And, again, it's kind of contradicting because I was so kind of down on Caldwell's extension. But, you know, I do like their team. I like Stafford. I like their defense. They're getting some takeaways on defense. They're putting up points on offense. And, you know, Matt Stafford with that receiving core with Marvin Jones, Golden Tate, Kenny Galladay, Amir Abdullah, Theo Riddick, Eric Ebron. I mean, the list goes on and on. I think it'll be tough against that Vikings defense, which is really good. But I like the Vikings to ultimately walk out of there with a win.
You already picked the Steelers game, so you ended with this. The Eagles at the Chargers right in front of an empty StubHub stadium. Who do you like?
You remember last year? When I told you when the Eagles were 3-0, and I think it was the game against Detroit, I said this is a game where the Eagles could lose, and they ended up losing. I think it was. Something happened late.
Yeah.
This is
what's
one
that
of
something
those
happened
games.
Late? Yeah, there was a fumble and then a pick on the last play.
Right. Something happened last year. Crazy. This is one of those games where the Eagles have got to be careful. You're looking at a Chargers team that is struggling. And you look at the Eagles coming off a very emotional win, their home opener. They beat the Giants. They dropped the Giants to 0-3 on a 61-yard field goal, as you already mentioned. This is a game that they've got to be very careful with. I think this is another one of those games where, it's an AFC opponent for the Eagles. If they lose it, it's not the end of the world, but it's one that they obviously should win. I think this will let us know a little bit, you know, what kind of football team we're dealing with. You know,
yeah, and I thought the same about
Eagles,
going to I mean, I thought the same about going to Kansas City. But, I mean, as I even typed it out, Eagles at Chargers, it sounds like one of those, not a trap game, but exactly like you're describing.
Right. So, I mean, I like the Eagles in the game. I think they will be able to go in, out there and get a win. But it's going to be closer than people think. But I ultimately think the Eagles will prevail against the Chargers in that 30,000 capacity stadium that the Chargers are playing in.
Yeah. The final question would be in regards to that. You said you have to be careful going into that game, but how exactly do you be careful? I mean, other than preparing as if it's a regular game.
I mean, they're going to prepare, and obviously when I say be careful, I'm saying, you know, for Eagles fans, I'm saying more so that. You got to be careful with, you know, getting your chest all, you know, puffed out after a win against the Giants and just the dramatic fashion that it happened.
Yeah.
I mean, that was an emotional game. You know, a lot of emotions in that one, obviously, with even not just the off-the-field stuff that led into it with all the national anthem stuff, but then going in and getting a win against the Giants after – you were up, you know, 14-0, and the Giants scored 21 unanswered. And, you know, it's a very emotional high-low game, and to come out victorious is great, but you got to be careful the next week that you don't still aren't riding the wave from the previous week. So I think the Eagles, like I said, will win, but I'm saying more from a fan's perspective, and obviously in that side of that locker room, Doug Peterson will have them ready to go, and he'll have them refocused on a new game. It's a new week, but they just got to, you know, make sure that they handle their business and do what they're supposed to do.
There you go. We did 16 questions from week 3, touched on some of the week 4 games. You got any other parting shots about the people taking it week by week?
Well, you know, like I told you off the air, it's just
what's your advice?
I mean,
what are they supposed to do?
What they're supposed to do is, you know, if you're going to – I mean, it's September, Cody. It's not even October. It's not even Halloween yet, and we're already making judgments on teams. You know,
I don't disagree with that, you better go and re-listen to the episode 6 or 7 or whatever when we talk about we talked to Les Bowen. Didn't we talk about how people just rush to the judgment?
Well, yeah, and that's exactly what I was referring to. You know, it's like sometimes you just take a step back, digest the information, give yourself a minute to think about what you just saw, process it, and then come out with something that you've, you know, clearly thought out. Not just, they just lost to the Bears, and they look bad doing it, so this team stinks. Like, I mean, God forbid something actually really happens in their personal lives with these people that have these judgments. God forbid something actually happens. I wouldn't want to be there. I mean, that would be an ugly sight because they'd go nuts.
Well, it's also just people taking it too. I mean, you're watching sports and you lose sight of the fact, and Mike talked about that as well, just you lose sight of the fact that you're, you know, they're also people playing a game too, not just the tools for your entertainment.
Right,
but
exactly. No, and I agree. I just think there's so many just irrational thoughts that get shot out after either every play, every touchdown, every series, every interception, after every game.
And what did I say? And what will prove them wrong? You just let the weeks pass by, and eventually, if you come out and you make a bold statement, well, it's either going to happen or it's not going to happen, or it's going to come true or not. I mean, again, like you said, if the team wins the Super Bowl at the end of the year, no one cares. Looking back at week 4, what
exactly,
you know, the stretch play didn't work, whatever.
Right. Exactly. Same set of
anyway. Well, that should do it there. We had Mike Kiwak in the beginning talking about some of the anthem stuff, and then we run through some of these games. Again, you can follow us on Twitter at the NFLCD. Find Dimitri's work at ProFootballSpot.com. Another edition of the NFLCD podcast. Subscribe on iTunes for free. Just search the NFLCD podcast.